local government and elections will come to order. First up on our agenda is the legislative auditor, Mr. Nobles. Welcome to the committee, and could you state your name for the tape?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and with me at the table is Judy Randall, who is the manager of the evaluation we're going to be presenting to you today. She is going to make that presentation in just a moment. I'd just like to offer a few words of preface. As I think members of this committee certainly know, the Office of the Legislative Auditor is asked to do evaluations of state-funded programs and state-created organizations. And this year, at the request of the Legislative Audit Commission and in response to requests from a lot of legislators, we are releasing four reports. The one that we have already released on governance of transit in the Twin Cities region. But just so you know what else is coming, I'll mention that tomorrow we're going to be releasing a report on non-emergency medical transportation, and then a report on civil commitment of sex offenders, and a report on environmental review and permitting. But today, Mr. Chairman, we are here to talk about our report on governance of transit in the Twin Cities metropolitan region. When we were given this assignment, a couple of things struck us. One, typically we are given topics that are of statewide concern and impact, and in this case, it is focused on the metropolitan area. And for those of you who are not from the metropolitan area, I guess we apologize for that, but we will appreciate your input as well, because as I think you well know, the Metropolitan Council, Metropolitan Transit, all of those kinds of issues are important not only to people here in this region but throughout the state. Certainly to you as you come here and do your job as legislators, you're impacted by our transit system. The other thing that struck us when we were given this assignment is the fact that it is about governance. And governance, although it's a topic that we talk about and deal with and live with a lot, it can be somewhat nebulous as to actually what are we talking about. It involves a variety of things. It certainly involves people, processes, policies, and structure. And so we had to sort out in scoping this exactly what we were going to look at. And as you're going to find out in our presentation, we focus mostly on structure. And as you will hear and see in Ms. Randall's presentation, the structure that we found is complex, fragmented, and has overlapping responsibilities among numerous organizations. The Metropolitan Council is at the center and heavily involved, but so are counties, both individually and through various county-based organizations. And then there are also cities and the various opt-out communities that are affiliated with various cities. In some respects, this intense level of involvement across several layers of government has helped move certain parts of the transit system forward. But we found that the complexity, fragmentation, and overlapping responsibilities have also fostered conflict and distrust and made coordination and consensus building more difficult. Therefore, we think this is a good opportunity to ask, is this the governance structure that will serve us well in the future as the desire and need for even more transit grows and resources tighten even further? We don't think so. We think that reform is needed, but we acknowledge that that reform will not be easy to accomplish. We recommend a sequential process beginning with a change in the composition of the Metropolitan Council. We start there because we think that is the root of the problem. We think that the proliferation of transit organizations that have been created in the metropolitan area, and you're going to hear about these in more detail, the County Improvement Transit Board, CTIP, the opt-outs that I referenced, various rail authorities, and an organization called the Transit Advisory Board, or TAB, but many others, were, in our view, created because elected officials, including legislators and the legislature, had to work around the Metropolitan Council to advance certain parts of the region's transit system. Now, some look at this history and say that these workarounds reflect only temporary political situations. But we think the problem is much more deeply embedded in structure and, again, in the composition of the Metropolitan Council. The Metropolitan Council is a policy-making body. Its decisions, certainly its transit decisions, affect every community in the region and, of course, every citizen that lives here as well. Yet only appointees of the governor sit at the council's table. This governance structure has long been characterized by many as lacking accountability. We think it has also undermined the Metropolitan Council's credibility, particularly among elected officials that represent the communities that are impacted by the council's decisions. There are various ways the legislature could address these concerns about the council's accountability and credibility, and many of them have been debated over the years. And we discussed several possibilities in our report. Our preferred solution is to simply put some city and county elected officials from the region on the council. We think that connection to elected officials and their communities would indeed enhance the accountability and credibility of the council and open the door for future streamlining of the region's governance structure for transit. To tell you more about what we found and what we recommend, Mr. Chairman, I would like to now call on Ms. Randall to make a presentation of our report. And thank you.
Thank you, Auditor. Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Judy Randall. I'm an evaluation coordinator with the Office of the Legislative Auditor. I'm pleased to be here today to talk with you about our evaluation on the governance of transit in the Twin Cities region. I'd also like to acknowledge my colleagues sitting behind me here, Emmy Bennett and Julie Trepke-Bastidas. Let me give you a little bit of context about what this evaluation included. We looked at a number of different forms of transit, including regular route buses, which include express and local bus service, light rail transit, commuter rail, and bus rapid transit. We did not look at dial-a-ride and metro mobility. Just to give you some scope, in 2009, the operating costs for transit in the region were about $319 million. These costs were covered by a variety of funding sources, including passenger fares, federal funds, and local funds, as well as state funds. And then there were about 81 million riders in 2009. While the bulk of the report was about governance, and of course that's what we're here today to talk about, I do want to touch quickly on the performance of the transit system, because we also did look at the performance of the transit system, and we compared the Twin Cities region system with 11 peers, including Denver, Portland, and Seattle. And we looked at it, at the transit system and the region's performance on a number of different measures. For example, we looked at efficiency measures, which include operating cost per passenger, fare recovery percentage, which is the percentage of the operating cost that's covered by passenger fares, subsidy per passenger, et cetera. On this group of measures, the Twin Cities region performed very well compared to the 11 peers. Among the 11 peers, we were typically ranked second on these measures. We also looked at a number of other measures, including service use and access measures. Service use measures look at the amount of service that's provided in the region and then look at the extent to which it's used, so the number of passengers per hour or per mile. And again, the Twin Cities region ranked relatively well. So, you know, based on our evaluation, the Twin Cities region's transit system is performing well. But we were asked to look at governance, and when we looked at the governance structure, we found that the region's transit governance structure is far from ideal. And we thought the best way to demonstrate this was to kind of put up this visual display of all the organizations, or many of the organizations, that are involved in transit governance in the region. First, in the middle of it is the Metropolitan Council. And I know you heard from the Metropolitan Council last week, so you probably know that there are two divisions within the council that are transit-related. The first is Metro Transit, which is responsible for the largest bus system in the region, also operates Hiawatha Light Rail and North Star Commuter Rail. The other transit division in the council is Metropolitan Transportation Services. That's responsible for dial-a-ride and contracted services, and it also serves as the transit planning arm within the council. Now, you may know that the Metropolitan Council is designated in law as the region's MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, which is a role that it has to do a transportation policy plan and allocate some federal funds. But federal requirements require that a region's MPO have local elected officials on it. and the Metropolitan Council board members right now, there are no local elected officials. So to meet those federal requirements, the region also has the Transportation Advisory Board, or TAB, which has 33 members, a majority of whom, 17, are local elected officials. So jointly, TAB and the Metropolitan Council fill that MPO role for the region. In addition to those two bodies, we have the regional railroad authorities for the seven counties in the region. So you can see the Washington County Regional Railroad Authority, Anoka County, Carver, Scott, Ramsey, Hennepin, and Dakota. The regional railroad authorities have the ability to levy a tax for rail purposes, for study or planning or developing rail projects in their counties. In addition to the regional railroad authorities, of course, you have the county boards of the seven counties. Now, the county commissioners typically serve on both the county board and the regional railroad authority, so you typically have the same actors, but again, it's another layer of organizations. It's another group of organizations that are involved in transit governance in the region. In 2008, the legislature authorized the creation of CTIB, the County's Transit Improvement Board. What the legislature really did was authorize counties in the region to enact a quarter-cent sales tax. And that the revenue from that sales tax would go towards transit. The counties that levied the sales tax would, through a joint powers agreement, form a board, which is CTIB, and that board would decide how to allocate those revenues. Five of the counties, those in green, have chosen to levy that quarter cent sales tax. So Washington, Anoka, Ramsey, Hennepin, and Dakota all levy that quarter cent sales tax and are all voting members of CTIB, and they collectively decide how to allocate those funds. Carver and Scott County have chosen to not levy that quarter cent sales tax. They attend the CTIB meetings, but they are non-voting members. In addition to these actors, then you have six suburban transit providers. In 1981, the legislature authorized certain communities who felt they were not receiving adequate transportation through the region's transit provider, they were authorized to, quote unquote, opt out of the region's transit system. And 12 communities in the south and west suburbs have chosen to opt out and are now served by six suburban transit providers, and they're listed there at the bottom: Shakopee Transit, Prior Lake Transit, et cetera. Then you also have a number of corridor commissions, task force, alliances, et cetera, made up of municipalities and interested parties along specific corridors that work to study, plan, think about, advocate for transit or transportation along specific corridors. I didn't list all of them here. There would be too many. They would fill up the page. But that just gives you an idea of who's involved. So you can see that there's a lot of organizations involved. And on here, I don't even have the legislature. I don't have MnDOT. So I don't have everybody involved in transit. But these are kind of the main decision makers in transit in the region. And you can see that there's no lines of hierarchy on this slide. And really, if we had lines, it would kind of be more like a spider web, because there are areas where each of these organizations is independent and can act autonomously. But then there's also overlapping areas and areas where they're kind of interdependent. So, for example, CTIB, the County's Transit Improvement Board, has the authority and autonomy to decide how to allocate the funds raised through that quarter cent sales tax. But those funding decisions have to be consistent with the Metropolitan Council's transportation policy plan. Similarly, the suburban transit providers have autonomy in deciding how to operate and deliver services within their region, within their communities, but they have to be in compliance with the Metropolitan Council's regional standards and in compliance with federal regulations. So there's a lot of, again, independence, but interdependence among these organizations. So when we looked at this governance structure, we found that there were a number of challenges. The first, which hopefully is evident from that previous slide, is that it's quite fragmented and it's very complex. But, you know, as we struggled and thought about this, we thought, well, just because it's messy on paper doesn't mean it's necessarily a bad thing. And complexity can be dealt with if people can work together and kind of overcome that. But we found a very high level, frankly, of distrust among some of the transit organizations in the region, in particular between the Metropolitan Council and the suburban transit providers, that makes the complexity and fragmentation all the more difficult to work through. There's also a lot of time-consuming coordination. This is in part because of the number of organizations involved, but also, again, because of the tense relationships, it makes coordination all the more difficult. And then finally, we learned and kind of understood that there's no agreed-upon set of priorities for transit development in the region. Now, as you saw in the previous slide, there's a lot of local organizations that are involved in transit, and that has done a lot to gather support and enthusiasm and understanding among local communities for transit and figuring out kind of how to move forward. But perhaps understandably, every local group thinks that their local project is the most important, and there's not really an agreed-upon set of region-wide criteria to determine which project should go forward next. There's widespread belief among everyone we met with that the next transit way to be developed would be the one either that's ready first or that has the most political capital, not necessarily the one that, based on ridership projections or cost projections, is the best for the region. And I just want to amplify on this a little bit more. When we're talking about priorities and what's to be built in the future, we're not talking about the Central Corridor. The Central Corridor is a hole in the ground outside this building already. That's obviously been agreed upon. What we're talking about is 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road. You know, is it going to be Bottineau Boulevard? Is it going to be Red Rock Corridor? Is it going to be Rush Line? And it doesn't seem like there's a set of criteria in the region to make those decisions, again, on a region-wide basis. So when we looked at all the fragmentation and the complexity of governance in the region, we thought about what would make sense for streamlining and for making this be more efficient. And, you know, the Metropolitan Council, as the regional planning agency in the region and as the transit planning agency in the region, it made sense that perhaps they would take a stronger role. But what we found when we looked at the Metropolitan Council is that the composition of the council itself is contributing to some of the challenges in the region's transit governance. As you know, and as Mr. Nobles mentioned, the Metropolitan Council members are appointed by the governor, and they serve terms that are coterminous with the governor. So, as you know, right now, Governor Dayton is reviewing applications and potentially going to, you know, reconstitute the council. Some members could stay over, but there's no requirement for that. Because they're all appointed by the governor, because the members are all appointed by the governor, we found that the council has limited accountability to the public. And as you may know, the council does levy a tax on a sub-region of the seven-county area. But again, there's not elected official representation on the council. We found in our work on this evaluation that the council had limited credibility with stakeholders and other transit organizations in the region. And again, this stems back to the fact that the council is made up of appointed members. When you're talking about transit, this is a lot of local elected officials, county commissioners, city council members working with their communities to understand and support the transit needs in their region. And when they look to the council, they don't see members who are also elected. And finally, we noted that the composition of the council itself contributes to a limited stability. Again, the governor is in the process of appointing a new council, potentially having a whole new council with a new set of priorities and strategic initiatives. In the fall, when we were speaking with people, the Metropolitan Council was undergoing an initiative to develop transitway guidelines. And a number of people we spoke with said, well, why should we work on this, or why should we get behind this right now? Let's wait and see what the next council wants to do, because we could put a lot of work into this, and the next council could throw it out the window. It might not be their priority. So again, the fact that the members are appointed by the governor and their terms are coterminous with the governor limits the accountability and the strength and the stability of the council. Finally, we found that the composition of the council itself has contributed to the large number of transit organizations in the region. There are several organizations that exist, we found, because the legislature, frankly, kind of went around the council to create them. So CTIB, the County's Transit Improvement Board, is perhaps the best and most recent example of this. When the legislature was looking at having a group have the authority to levy the quarter-cent sales tax, rather than give that authority to the Metropolitan Council or rather than the legislature authorizing the tax itself, it went around the council and authorized the counties to do it and gave them the ability to create CTIB, thereby creating another organization in the region. Similarly, with the suburban transit providers, rather than working with the regional transit provider of the time, the legislature allowed communities to opt out of that system, create their own system, and there you have six more transit providers in the region. So this leads us to our key recommendation, which is that the legislature should restructure the Metropolitan Council. And as Mr. Nobles mentioned, in the report, we walked through a number of potential options for what that could look like. The discussion is on pages 42 through 49 in your report, and I thought I would run through the options that we highlight. I will point out, however, that there are as many options as there are people in the room. There's lots of permutations on this. The devil is definitely in the details. We lay out some broad kind of categories and ways to think about it, but certainly encourage further discussion on these. So our first option is simply to have staggered terms. So you still have the council members appointed by the governor, but you have staggered terms. And I'll discuss each of these further. The second one, which is the one we recommend, is to have a mix of appointed and elected council members, all serving staggered terms. The third option is to have council members be county commissioners, again with the staggered terms. And then finally, the fourth option we outline is having the council members be directly elected. I'm going to walk quickly through the pros and cons of each of these. Again, happy to take questions whenever you'd like. Option one is still having appointed members but serving staggered terms. Really, the strongest pro on this is that it would improve stability. You would, again, have some continuity in the membership, so initiatives started by one council would presumably be continued on as you have some of the same members staying over. Frankly, we also see this as the most politically feasible option. It's the smallest change, but we think it still provides an improvement. The cons on this, though, are still numerous. You still have limited accountability. You don't have the elected officials. So, again, limited accountability, limited credibility, and you still would require a lot of coordination. The second option, which, again, is the one we recommend in the evaluation, is having a mix of appointed and elected members serving staggered terms. So you still have the stability offered by staggered terms, as in the first option, but now you have a mix. You have some appointed members, which we think is important to provide kind of a regional perspective, but then you have some elected members. And by elected members, we don't mean directly elected. We mean members who hold an election certificate from another body. They're a county commissioner or they're a city council member. We think this would increase the accountability of the council. It would increase the credibility. Again, the stability would help the council to maintain its initiatives whether or not the governor changes. There are still some cons, though, for this. Again, the devil's in the details in terms of the actual voting weights and representation. Those details would need to be worked out. And this would be an increased workload for officials who are already serving, as a county commissioner or a city council person. Option three that we discuss is having all members be county commissioners. The pros continue, and again, the staggered term. So for the pros here, we've got the stability, the credibility, accountability. The cons here, because you wouldn't have any appointed members, we think the decisions could more likely be parochial or influenced by parochial considerations. We think this is politically more difficult to accomplish as we go along the spectrum of potential changes. And again, the devil's in the details in terms of the voting weights and representations. The final option, and again, this is kind of the farthest along the spectrum that we discuss, is having the council members be directly elected. We think this would increase accountability and credibility and allow the council, again, to kind of have its own identity. But we're a little concerned about the potential to be influenced by parochial considerations and, again, the details in terms of who's voting and how the districts are determined and things like that would need to be worked out. So ultimately, we recommend option one, which was the mix of appointed and elected members serving staggered terms. We think this would provide a good mix of accountability, credibility, and stability. And I think very important, is that this could lead to more streamlined governance. As we looked at the history of governance in the governance of transit in the region over the last 40-odd years, we saw that there were periods of fragmentation followed by periods of consolidation. And it seems that now we're close to kind of a peak in fragmentation. And we think that, it's important to kind of head down a path towards some more streamlined governance. But to do that, we think the first step is making these changes to the Metropolitan Council to restructure it. We acknowledge that restructuring the Metropolitan Council alone is not going to fix the fragmentation. It's not going to solve the complexity. But we think it's the first necessary step before we can go down a path towards accomplishing some of those other goals. So quickly, I'll talk about some of those other governance things that could happen once that first step is done. The first is regarding the Transportation Advisory Board. You may recall that they are there in large part to help the Met Council meet the federal requirements for having elected officials on the Metropolitan Planning Organization, the MPO. Well, if the Metropolitan Council is restructured to have elected officials on the board, then we think the Transportation Advisory Board could go away. Again, it would be one less organization that communities and organizations in the region would have to work with. We also considered recommending whether to eliminate the county's Transit Improvement Board, CTIB. Ultimately, we determined if the counties are the one who are levying the tax and raising the funds, then the county should be the one deciding how those funds are spent. So it makes sense for them to exist for as long as the counties are the ones levying the tax. But if the legislature decides to have the Met Council levy the tax, or if the legislature decides to levy that tax directly, CTIB could possibly go away. Or if the legislature decides to have a larger county commissioner role on the Met Council, there's a chance that CTIB and the Met Council could kind of come together, could merge a little bit. We also looked at Metro Transit and the Metropolitan Council. There were some concerns we heard regarding the fact that the Metropolitan Council might have a conflict of interest because as the planning agency, it may alter or direct its plans to the benefit of Metro Transit. We couldn't substantiate that, and we think there are some benefits to having them together. And the council has done a number of initiatives to increase transparency and consistency within the region. Finally, we considered recommending the elimination of the suburban transit providers. Those are the six transit providers that serve the 12 communities in the south and west suburbs. Collectively, they serve about 7% of the bus riders in the region. And I think if we were starting from scratch, we probably wouldn't have created this system with these six suburban transit providers. But the truth is we're not starting from scratch, and those providers have done a good job of serving their communities. So we don't recommend for their elimination. That being said, there are six of them. Four of them are city-run and serve just one city, pretty much. And so we do recommend some consolidation among the providers. In particular, we recommend that Maple Grove Transit and Plymouth Metrolink consolidate, and that Prior Lake Transit and Shakopee Transit consolidate. We think it would make their operations a little more efficient, and at least on the margin, it would help to reduce the number of transit organizations in the region. So with that, I'll end the formal part of the presentation. I'm happy to answer questions. There's a lot more detail in the report, and I'm happy to talk about any of it. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, Ms. Randall. Any questions from members at this point? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Chair, and Ms. Randall. I'm from St. Cloud, so most of my questions focus on the North Star line. It appears that in your survey that you didn't include, I've heard them called collar counties before, the counties outside the district, and I guess maybe I missed that. Did you include quite a bit of those collar counties in that survey? Is that correct, or?
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Peterson, we conducted a survey of county commissioners, city council members, and city administrators in the seven-county region only. So we did not include the collar counties. And to be honest with you, we got a very poor response rate from those, from all of those elected officials and city administrators. And so ultimately, we were only able to use the results we had for kind of some more anecdotal evidence rather than more.
Senator Peterson.
So, Chair and Ms. Randall, it seems like it would make sense because I think those collar counties that they don't want to be included, but yet in my case with Stearns and Sherburne County, they are absolutely being affected by the decisions being made by this group. And, in terms of reform, I think it would be important to look for a way to include those folks if they're going to be affected by that. Was there any recommendations along that line at all or not?
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Peterson. We thought a lot about the collar counties. We thought about the counties that kind of, people call them fingers, that extend along the transitways that are being developed. And I think where we landed was that there's a lot to take care of in the seven-county region first, and that our recommendations don't preclude looking at things that include the collar counties or the finger communities, however you want to call them. But that first, the main focus was first kind of getting things streamlined within the seven-county region, and then you could potentially look there. But this is, we view it as a first step.
haven't seen a big lineup of people trying to get in to the council. Senator Peterson.
I would agree. I don't think that there is. But the bottom line is that if we're going to compete, for example, with North Star, and you probably, many of you probably noticed that the governor's got the Ramsey County Transit station in his bonding bill that he talked about this morning. And the problem with commuter rail, the more stations you put along that rail line, the more it stops, and all of a sudden the less competitive it becomes. And so that's where you have to figure out a way, if you're going to make decisions as a metropolitan council that's going to affect residents and elected officials out in Sherburne County and out in Stearns County, they have to have a forum that allows them to properly represent their constituents, and that's not there right now.
Mr. Chair, if I could, Senator Peterson, I think you're absolutely right. And I think right now, with the way the governance of transit is in the region, it's even less clear where the collar counties can go to talk and to have those discussions. And so, I mean, not to sound like a broken record, but I think, you know, if you can streamline the governance in the region, then I think it might make it easier to work with communities that are then outside of the seven-county region.
Senator Peterson.
And to follow up on that, then, it appears that in your report that my sense is that you did not really like the Department of Transportation handling those, an example, handling the commuter rail outside of the metropolitan district, which I think a lot of elected officials in those collar counties are probably more comfortable with the DOT handling that. Was there a reason why you didn't really like the... Is that an accurate statement, I guess, for me to say that you didn't like the DOT handling that?
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, I wouldn't say that's accurate. You know, right now, and Met Council folks might be able to speak to this better, you know, Met Council and MnDOT certainly coordinate a lot regarding transit, including rail, in the seven-county region. But Met Council is really the lead transit agency in the region. And since our evaluation and the scope of it was really focused on the seven-county region, we did not do a lot to evaluate MnDOT's role or performance in the rest of the state.
Okay. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ma'am, could you talk a little bit about the way that the districts are formed in the Metropolitan Council versus CTIB, for instance? Because I'm just thinking about, and my apologies to the CTIB chair here, but Hennepin County has seemingly such a strong block on CTIB because of their large population, versus the way the Metropolitan Council districts, if I'm not mistaken, they're all equally apportioned by population. And so how is that difference of how the districts are comprised play into your results or your recommendations?
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben. Page 8 doesn't totally answer your question, but at least does show a map of just the region and the communities that are in the counties in CTIB and the suburban transit providers, just to ground us a little bit. The Metropolitan Council districts are outlined in law. They're done every 10 years once the census results are in. And, yes, my understanding is the same as yours, Senator, that it's based on a proportionment, you know, equal proportion for each district. CTIB is the member representation is the five counties that have levied the quarter cent sales tax, and the voting, and Commissioner McLaughlin's here and hopefully can answer this better than I, the voting is based on based on both the sales tax revenue, proportional to the sales tax revenue, but then also a certain number of counties. So my understanding, and again, Commissioner McLaughlin, I'm looking to you, is that three counties, I believe, have to vote, but then also you need a majority of the sales tax revenue representation. Did I mangle that too much? A little. I mangled it a little. But you need at least three counties, and you need a majority of the 63% on the revenue. Thank you, Commissioner.
And Senator Sieben, we do have Commissioner McLaughlin's on the agenda to be up next, and would we be okay waiting for him to pursue that? Or
yeah, but I was more interested in the legislative auditor's recommendations on the difference than of this governance structure, because if it's strictly proportional weighting and voting, that's different than...
I see. Continue, Senator Sieben.
That's different than the way CTIB, although I recognize they made extreme efforts to make it fair and make sure a majority in all their decisions have been near unanimous, there's still a little difference, I think, for the way I look at it from, for instance, East Metro projects that advance versus West Metro, and part of that may come into the governance structure.
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. And, yeah, I agree. I mean, there is a difference. Of course, CTIB is just the five counties also and not the whole seven-county region. You know, when I said the devil's in the details, some of those details we do leave to the legislature to decide how to have the representation. So when we recommend a structure that's a mix of elected and appointed officials, there's a lot of ways that could go. We lay out a couple of different options in the report. You know, Metropolitan Airports Commission and the Mosquito Control District have some where they have a certain number of county commissioners. I think you could also do it proportional by population and have the elected officials be based on proportion. I guess the point is there's a lot of ways to go with it.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just elaborate a little bit, and I think really this report, although it is a lot about transit and it's frankly more, I think, about governmental structure and operations. I don't know which of the committees will be the committee of original jurisdiction on legislation, but certainly some of these details, I think, need to be discussed and sorted out in this committee and its counterpart in the House. Another issue, for example, that has been raised that we don't address, but I think it's one that is important, certainly to the Senate, and that is how does Senate confirmation come in to play in any appointments that might be made, even of potentially elected officials? And how would those appointments be made? Would the governor appoint certain elected officials from the region? Would those names be recommended to him? So, again, I guess just to emphasize yet one more time, there are a lot of devils in the details that, you know, we think you're in a good position to sort out. So, but we put forth, I think, the basic need for greater accountability and credibility.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have made a good case for why we need some changes and streamlining and accountability and transparency. And I know I understand Senator Peterson's concern about representation and Senator Sieben's concern in the then about how that's appropriate or apportioned. My concern has more to do with the dollars that are attached. And I'm thinking about the TAB that was formed to satisfy federal regulations, and then the CTIB. And I'm just wondering, how are those organizations funded? And then further, if your recommendations were followed, where would there be financial savings for taxpayers? And if so, at what level?
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Nelson, a lot of good questions, and I'll do my best. I believe TAB is voluntary. Is that right? Arlene, I'm looking at you. TAB is voluntary? Yeah, so, yeah, TAB is appointed members, so they're not directly paid through TAB. CTIB, same. It's the county's, you know, the county commissioners serve on CTIB. I think where the cost savings would come, and we didn't quantify this in the report, but I think when you kind of study how things are done, you can see it, is in the coordination and the staff time spent on working through issues, working with difficult, through difficult relationships. You know, ultimately the goal is to get more streamlined so things can work more effectively. Is there a, you know, automatic dollar savings right away? I don't know. But I think eventually you get to better results through, again, more efficient and more streamlined working relationships.
Thank you. Just one follow-up.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So while some of these organizations then are not necessarily funded directly through the Met Council, but they are perhaps employees from county governments, would it be fair to assume that there would be some savings is either in also the county governments that are making up the composition of these other entities?
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, to be honest, I don't know. But I guess what I would mostly say is that maybe they have more time than to to work on, you know, furthering transit in the region and other transportation. And I don't know, again, that it's, you know, maybe they don't work 50-hour weeks, they work 48-hour weeks.
Okay.
But, Mr. Chair, if I could just, again, elaborate, there is some cost associated with some of these standalone organizations, although county commissioners, County Commissioner Peter McLaughlin, it's my understanding, is paid as a county commissioner, and he just adds to his duties his work on CTIB and doesn't receive for himself additional remuneration. But, in fact, CTIB is staffed. So there are certain staffing costs for that organization that has to be paid for by somebody, and ultimately it's paid for by the taxpayers.
Senator Nelson.
Just one last follow-up. So who does pay for the staffing then? Where, what budget pocket does that come out of right now?
CTIP pays for that out of the money that they raise through their taxing authority. The County Commissioner McLaughlin, again, is here, and I think he's on the agenda. He can more directly speak to that. But again, I think it's fair to say that our recommendation rests not really on the hope that we're going to save a lot of money through this consolidation and streamlining of the administrative structure. I think what we really see here is a need for greater transparency so the public really understands who is making the decisions. Greater participation by elected officials from the region. And again, I think Senator Peterson's point is very much ours. And again, as Ms. Randall said, we addressed only the seven-county area. But I think the principle that we raise would apply even if the seven-county metropolitan region were extended on. You simply have a lot of elected officials, and many of you have been elected officials at the local level and still are elected officials at the local level in some ways in representing communities that are impacted, as Senator Peterson just said, very directly by the Metropolitan Council. And I think it is sometimes it rubs elected officials the wrong way that they are so directly accountable for their decisions. And often very directly on transit decisions. And the Metropolitan Council members are not. It's that simple. And so there is pushback and there is a lot of questioning here and other places of the Metropolitan Council's legitimacy and credibility to be the ultimate decision maker on these very important issues.
Thank you.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Chair, and Ms. Randall. To follow up a little bit, my question relates to any answers your staff may have gotten from the folks you interviewed relating commuter rail specifically to transit, because I guess I'm kind of the opinion that transit, both buses and rail, compete with commuter rail, and the taxpayers in Minnesota has a monster investment in that rail line. In fact, I think it was so big, I don't remember the amount, but I'm fairly certain the stock price of that rail company went up as soon as the word of that investment. And that's something that is not going to go away for a generation or for a lifetime. That is here to stay. The taxpayers are stuck with that monster investment on that, the right to run those commuter rails going west out of the Twin Cities there. And that is not going to go away. That's the bottom line. Was there any sense in your interviews that the existing transit system is going to compete with the commuter rail at all? Or
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, I think there's different concerns depending on who you are in the region. There is a concern among bus providers that rail is going to crowd them out and not necessarily provide the same service, but kind of take all the investment, and so then there wouldn't be funding left for bus. I don't know that there's necessarily validity behind that, but there is concern about that. I think in an ideal transit system, and Met Council folks can speak better to this, you have lots of different modes. You have bus, you have light rail, you have commuter rail, you have express bus, you have urban local bus. I mean, you get the picture, and they all kind of work together, and they serve different needs. So commuter rail, you know, is a different type of transit than light rail, than bus. And, you know, it wouldn't necessarily make sense or wouldn't make sense to have a light rail, you know, up the North Star corridor. But commuter rail makes more sense there. So you know, from our evaluation, from looking at it, it seems to me that there's a place for lots of different transit and that they can complement each other when a region can think and plan and use objective criteria to develop a system.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. When you were preparing this report, did your organization look into any alternative methods of how the Met Council might deliver on its services, namely private sector, hiring a private sector, or privatizing some of the work rather than have it all in-house governance?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, we did not directly. I mean, we're certainly aware of that as an issue, but I don't think we have a lot to contribute other than the principle that I think any of us here could articulate, that there are hazards in a monopoly service. And there are some advantages, whether they're even competing public systems or private systems. And I think that's what we see as some of the advantage from the opt-outs. And again, one of the reasons why we came to the conclusion not to recommend doing away with the opt-outs is that in addition to providing services to their communities in an effective way, I think they have shown a pattern of connectedness to their customers, to concern about efficiency that, frankly, Metro Transit might well learn from. I'm sure that Metro Transit officials probably feel they have some things they could teach the opt-outs as well. But I think we now have in the metropolitan area something of an experiment about what we can get from competition. That could indeed be a consideration for expansion, but it's not one that we really examine closely.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add one thing, though.
Ms. Randall.
Thank you. The Metropolitan Council, through the Metropolitan Transportation Services Division, does contract out for some of the bus service, and it works with Metro Transit. So the routes that Metro Transit maybe can't as cost-effectively deliver, Metropolitan Transportation Services contracts out with private providers. So there's already some of that, maybe not to the extent you're thinking, but there's some of that in the system already.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Nobles, as one looks at alternative methods to create a membership on a Metropolitan Council or an organization that may do some of the same work, did your office consider perhaps a model where instead of county officials doing the work, which would be augmented onto their full-time jobs anyway, that perhaps maybe a LCMR style of commission, a Metropolitan Commission of Legislators that come from the region be appointed to serve in the same capacity? That satisfies an elected requirement that I think most of the public would appreciate. Second, it also recognizes the localized representation, and it wouldn't have to be every single member of the legislature, but maybe a portion of them that would represent in an equal manner. Did you give any thought to that type of a model rather than giving it to county officials?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, honestly, we didn't, and I think part of the reason for that is that it could potentially raise some constitutional issues. Although the Metropolitan Council is somewhere between a state agency and local government, I think it still has many functions that would be considered executive, and obviously there are limitations on the degree to which legislators can serve in executive positions. There is also, of course, a position that I think has been taken more by case law and opinions of the Attorney General, but maybe statutory as well, and that is that legislators cannot serve in another office other than being a legislator. Now, admittedly, that sometimes is pushed a bit, where legislators do, in fact, serve on a variety of boards and commissions, usually in a non-voting way. But we have a few examples, the IRRRB being one, where you get awfully close to substantive authority. And indeed, for that reason, that service of legislators on the IRRRB has been drawn into question from time to time. But I think principally you would have to address the question of whether or not you're gravitating towards those legislators inappropriately serving in an executive position.
Mr. Chair, while we're
Senator
on
Lemmer.
Mr. Nobles, do you think that the Met Council in and of itself, the way it is now, raises constitutional questions of how it's formed?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Lemmer, I don't see a constitutional issue myself. What I see more is an issue of principle, which we've tried to articulate, and that is one of accountability, credibility, legitimacy. I would just add to the conversation that we've had, I think it was mentioned briefly, the Metropolitan Council really stands out as the one metropolitan organization we have that does not have any representation of local elected officials or their representatives. I could stand corrected, but as I go down the list in my head, and I think it was mentioned, from the Metropolitan Mosquito Control Commission to the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission, the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and numerous others that others might be able to think of, we typically, in some way, put some representation of local elected officials on those bodies. When we came to the Metropolitan Council, we did not do that. And I think it has created an issue and a problem that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, one last question. Mr. Nobles, I can understand why it would be definitely considered an executive branch authority. However, allowing it to have its own tax authority probably crosses the line. As you may know, at least on a legislative model, the power of the purse belongs to the legislature and state government. And things have to start in at least in our model, a House of Representatives. And we may conjure up an idea in the Senate, but it really has to start in the House. And the executive branch gets at it at the very end of our deliberations. In this particular case, the Met Council has the authority to tax, even without representation by an elected body, other than the appointment process of the governor.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Lemmer, I think you're correct in that, but I would only point out that they have that authority by delegation from the legislature. So it's been created by statute in this body. It's therefore something you could, if you felt the need to, withdraw. But I think what we are suggesting is the remedy for us is that you make them more accountable and have some representation from elected officials. For some of you, that may not go far enough. That's why some have, in fact, recommended that the Metropolitan Council, because of its taxing authority and for other reasons as well, should be elected directly.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Cruz.
Mr. Chairman, and I guess whoever would be able to answer this, I have a question concerning the Transportation Advisory Board, a couple of them actually. I know with CTIB and the Met Council, they serve a policy function. Does TAB serve a policy function as well, or is that strictly for the MPO pass-through? Is it just a transfer of dollars and there's really no decisions made there? And then I guess the follow-up question to that would be, is there a reason why that structure wouldn't be able to function with the Department of Transportation in that same capacity?
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Cruz, excuse me, regarding TAB's responsibilities, they make programming decisions, that's what they're called, where it's investment decisions on kind of a 2 to 4 year timeline on federal funds that come into the region. So they are making investment decisions. Regarding the question with MnDOT, can you ask that again?
Well, just would it be able to function in that same, Mr. Chair, sorry, would it be able to function in that same way? With the Department of Transportation.
Mr. Chairman, I think if I could just clarify, that question is presuming the functions of the Metropolitan Council might be transferred to the Department of Transportation. Is that correct?
Correct.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, I don't see why not. You know, I mean, TAB serves as you would need to have MnDOT be designated as the MPO for the region. That would be the first thing. And then MnDOT would need to, I guess I'm starting to talk kind of out of my comfort zone here, and maybe the Metropolitan Council folks could answer that. My understanding is, you know, the federal requirements require elected officials on the MPO. The TAB serves that role. And then the state statutes have designated the Metropolitan Council as the MPO for the region. So you basically need the state to identify a body as the MPO, and then you need to have elected officials also working on it, whether it's all one body, which is what we recommend with restructuring the Metropolitan Council, or whether MnDOT somehow is named as the MPO, which other people might be able to say better than I, with the TAB, that would probably be okay.
Okay, I think we're going to move along to the County Transit Improvement Board, Commissioner McLaughlin. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Peter McLaughlin. I'm chair of the Hedman County Regional Railroad Authority and appearing today as chair of the County's Transit Improvement Board. County's Transit Improvement Board is comprised of two county commissioners from each of the five counties in the metropolitan area which adopted the quarter-cent sales tax for transit expansion, plus the chair of the Metropolitan Council. I'd like to begin, if I could today, Mr. Chairman, by indicating that we need to go back to fundamentals here, that the transit system was rated, according to the legislative auditor, as among the very best performers in the country. So if we're worried about performance, this Metropolitan Council, this Metropolitan Transit Agency, and the multiple agencies that are involved here actually is performing very well by multiple measures. We ranked, they did a review of 11 peer regions, and pick a measure, and they picked a bunch of them. We were in the top four or five among all of those. So I think, number one, this is about a function that's being performed pretty darn well in the metropolitan area in this state of Minnesota. So if performance is what matters, and former Chair Bell was in the paper commenting on this recently, if performance matters, I think this system has to be given a good grade. Secondly, we support, the County Transit Improvement Board strongly supports the report's basic recommendation that the council should be restructured to include local elected officials. Just as Mr. Nobles points out the hazards of of monopoly service provision, there's the hazards of monopoly planning and decision making. And we believe that populating the Met Council with local elected officials is going to add different insights and make the decisions that are made by the Metropolitan Council more accepted and more able to be implemented within the region. You know, the old model, I think it's fair to say, of the Met Council when it was founded back in the late 60s was of the sort of the gray eminences, people who are one step removed from the processes of politics, not occupying an elected position. And I think the thinking here has evolved a little bit, and that having some people who've been involved in local government as a part of with a regional vision, that they can, in fact, make a contribution. And so we do, in fact, support the notion that the Met Council should be populated in part by some local elected officials. Third, we think it's a serious mischaracterization when there's a talk about the inefficiencies and the effects of this fragmentation. That there's been an overstatement on the disagreements and conflicts within our region about priorities for transit implementation. We think that that's an overstatement in the report. And finally, the county's Transit Improvement Board was directed by state statute to do a few things, not a lot of things, a few things. And it was to impose a tax on a county-by-county basis, put the money in a pot, govern that money with the Joint Powers Board, and then make the decisions in such a way as to expand transit in the metropolitan area. We think we've done that, following the direction of state statute. If I might, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just elaborate on these points briefly for the committee. We think that this system has operated pretty efficiently. We are limited by law to 3/4 of 1% of the total sales tax revenues for our administrative costs at the county's transit improvement board. So by statute, 3/4 of 1%. We have operated within that. And in the process, we have actually made investments of $317 million in less than 3 years. We've had to create relationships from blank pieces of paper, the relationship with the Metro Transit and Metro Council. We've had to create that from blank pieces of paper so that some of this notion of sort of waste time and inefficiency is about establishing the boundaries for the county's Transit Improvement Board and Metropolitan Council. At one point, there was a discussion that if there was for example, something like a cost overrun or liability exposure, the Met Council's original proposal was we ought to be, the C2 County's Transit Improvement Board should be exposed on the liability side. We said, we don't think so. And we had to have several meetings to discuss this. We said, we don't think so because we don't make any of the decisions about the contracts. We don't have relationships with the contractors. And so our money, our efforts should not be exposed. It should be the owner and the operator of the transit system, which is Metro Transit, that does that. It took a few meetings to figure that out, but some might point to that as an area of inefficiency. But I think if you want a group that's actually exercising due diligence and protect good stewardship of taxpayers' resources, I think you'd want us to do that. You would want us to have protected that resource and have the people who are actually responsible for the contracts to be the ones responsible if there's a problem with the contracts. We also think, Mr. Chairman, that it should be on the record here that CTIB, County's Transit Improvement Board, doesn't own anything. We don't operate any transit, and we have no staff. We contract out for the staffing help, some of the staffing help we get, and then we rely upon our own county staff people to provide assistance as well. And that's, we believe, a very lean model. That's why we can do this with 3/4 of 1% of the revenues that are generated by the taxes in these five counties.
Excuse me, Commissioner McLaughlin, that 3/4 of 1% is that of the $300 million?
No, Mr. Chairman, that would be three quarters of 1% on an annual basis. It's on the order. We've had revenues that range from about $86 million to $91 million last year. So 3/4 of 1% of that. So it's $660,000, give or take. That's the orders of magnitude on an annual basis. And with that, we are able to provide for the review. And we can go through all the things that we do, but we actually review what the priorities in the region are. And make allocations of this capital, this $315 million that we've $317 million that we've allocated over the 3 years.
But it's, Commissioner, it is strictly an allocation process.
Mr. Chairman, it is an allocation process with those resources. We go through. We have we ask for proposals at the beginning. First, we set criteria for what projects would be eligible for funding from the county's Transit Improvement Board. Anything that we invest in has to be consistent by statute with the Met Council's priorities. We can't go willy-nilly and fund anything that we want to fund in transit in the region. Our investments, and this was negotiated with the Met Council before the beginning of the 2008 legislative session, so every investment we make is consistent with the Met Council's plan. They've got a map, what their priorities are for 2030, we can only invest in those things that are consistent with that. So,
Commissioner, who collects the money? Is that the Metropolitan Council?
No, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, it's collected as the sales tax is. The county boards, the five county boards, imposed a 0.25-cent sales tax. We sent the message over to the state revenue department, and the money is collected along with the sales tax revenue, the general state sales tax, and the various municipal sales taxes that are in place. The revenue department gets a certain percentage for collecting the tax, and I can't quote you the number on that, but it's a modest percentage. And then the proceeds then come to the county's Transit Improvement Board for distribution. We don't collect it. There's fairly modest cost of collecting the tax.
So, Commissioner, the Department of Revenue transfers it directly to this board. It doesn't go through the Met Council.
It does not. The Met Council, Mr. Chairman, they are oftentimes an applicant for the funds. For like Central Corridor, for example, the Met Council applied to the county's Transit Improvement Board for $106 million, $7 million for 2011. We made that grant to them, and that contract has been signed. So they apply to us.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, or if there are questions, I'll pause.
Okay, seeing none, thank you, Commissioner.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, if I could, I've got...
Go ahead.
If I might. I think it's important to comment on this overstatement of the differences between the Metropolitan Council and the County's Transit Improvement Board on transit ways that are to be implemented. There have been no differences, no significant differences between the Council and CTIP on Central Corridor as the next LRT line, on Cedar and 35W as priority BRT lines, on North Star as the first commuter rail line, Southwest as the third LRT line. We've made investments in Red Rock and Rush Line. And as I stated, every investment we've made has been consistent with the Metropolitan Council's plans. The report makes a great, seems to make a great point of the fact that there are different maps and claims that, in fact, there's a different vision for transit in the region. I would differ with that. The short and medium term goals of the council and the county's transit improvement board are identical. When you get out into the fog of the future, nearer to 2030, then whether the Red Rock corridor should be commuter rail or BRT, or whether Botineau corridor should be BRT or light rail, we don't know yet. The work has not been done. Sufficient work hasn't been done in the process to make that determination. But in terms of the major priorities, which are to connect major stops in Dakota County, the Mall of America, the airport, Eden Prairie Center, the University of Minnesota, St. Paul, reaching out to the north on 35E, and up towards St. Cloud, those priorities are common priorities that we share. And so I think that it is a gross overstatement to say that there are huge differences in the priorities that the council and the county's transit improvement have for transit investment in the region. The fragmentation in decision-making, I think there's been some discussion about arterial BRT and whether that should be, that was a major source of disagreement. The fact is the county's transit improvement board didn't have the resources to pursue these other major corridors and arterial BRT, and we felt that was a responsibility of the Met Council to do that. That was just a line, not a difference in vision. We support arterial BRT. Our decision was we didn't have the resources to make that go forward. There's been a question raised about whether there's this investment going on without any standards, or that somehow there are decisions being made that are not rational decisions. They're not really prioritizing. The fact of the matter is that we don't invest willy-nilly. We have to, one, adhere to the council's plan. Two, that in order to obtain federal funding, and the federal government is providing half of the funding for the Central Corridor, for example, to get that, and I think the Met Council people will agree with me, you've got to crawl across ground glass and on your hands and knees to get that. And they have criteria, and then another set, and another set. So this is anything but arbitrary. And in addition to that, the county's Transit Improvement Board reviews these things, and we are elected officials. We actually voted to put a tax in place. I believe that's, when you talk about fundamental accountability, when you put a tax in place, you're accountable. That's what I believe, and we have lived up to that. And finally, we do have review by a committee that was provided by statute that's comprised of Met Council, municipal officials, and county officials. There is a suggestion in the report that transitway organizations are not required to consider ongoing operating and maintenance costs. It's not in statute, but the fact of the matter is the county's Transit Improvement Board makes a 50% contribution to the operating costs of the transitways in which we invest. So 35W Busway, Cedar Avenue Busway, Hiawatha, and North Star, and Central in the future, when it opens up in 2014, the county's Transit Improvement Board, out of the sales tax, will contribute 50% of the net operating subsidy to that. It's currently on the order of $14 million a year. And when we do our spreadsheets and figure out how much we can invest in the future, and we have a 20-year spreadsheet, Mr. Chairman and members, we book 50% of the operating costs on any lines that are going to come into play. So we're looking at the operating costs, we book it, and we make sure we have the resources to actually live up to that responsibility. Finally, the notion of restructuring the Metropolitan Council, as I said, we agree with that. That having local elected officials on there, we think is a good idea. We think city participation is essential. There's been some suggestion that maybe it ought to be just county commissioners as local elected officials. I think our thought is that city participation is essential. If you think about the breadth of what the council does, local land use plans and the like, we think it's positive to have city officials participating, and it ought not be specifically designated just the mayors of Minneapolis and St. Paul. I think it's got to be looking at municipal officials from across the region. I would say, Mr. Chairman, that the one suggestion that was made at one point was that every county gets one representative on the Metropolitan Council. That's a little problematic, I would say. You would have Scott and Carver counties with the same number of votes as Ramsey and Hennepin. And I would think that Senator Sieben might not think that that's a very good east-west balance. Former U.S. Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan used to say that the United States Senate would be unconstitutional if it weren't in the Constitution. And so I think we need to look at how you distribute votes on a base that in some way aspires to and gets to the one-person, one-vote notions that have been in play before. I would say that on the CTIB, we distribute votes on population and sales tax distributed, but we took, as a way to protect the small counties and also to protect the big counties, we said it's not going to be just a majority vote. If it were just a majority vote, Hennepin County and the Met Council would be the majority and we could pass anything we wanted. That didn't seem fair. People weren't going to join a joint powers agreement if that were the case. And so what we negotiated was 100 votes. You get 5 to the Met Council, and then the balance of the votes are distributed based on population and sales tax generated. But then you have to have 63 of 100 votes to pass anything. Now, that's an odd number, you would think. But it was negotiated out among the parties here. 63 votes, and you have to have the votes of 3 of the 5 counties. So you can't have 1 or 2 counties or 1 county in the Met Council or 2 counties in the Met Council ramrodding these priorities. There's got to be a broad agreement across the region. We've achieved that. Every grant that we've given thus far, Mr. Chairman and members, has been unanimously approved by the county's Transit Improvement Board.
Commissioner, we do want to give the Met Council a chance to talk, and we're kind of running out of time, so if you could.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy at some point to talk, and I'll visit with the senator from St. Cloud, Senator Peterson, to talk about how that governance works in the corridors that go out, beyond. And then the role of MnDOT, I think, is important. They've actually participated in some of the investments in 35W, 394, Cedar Avenue, and I think that role is important. I think having MnDOT run this, take over the functions of Met Council or Met Transit, actually, or in the TAB, it actually has to be a majority of elected officials. That's what the federal law says. And so having MnDOT just run it administratively would not we would be ineligible for federal funds on that. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Commissioner. No questions. So is the Mayor Tom Furlong here on behalf of Suburban Transit Association? Thank you for coming. Welcome to the committee. And if you could state your name for the record.
Thank you. I'm Mayor Tom Furlong with the City of Chanhassen, and I'm here today representing the Suburban Transit Association, whose membership includes the opt-out providers, the suburban transit providers. Mr. Chairman, I guess just for clarification, time-wise, in terms of my comments today and the committee schedule, I want to just be aware of that. If there's a certain time frame you'd like me to fit my comments within?
About 30, no.
30 minutes would be fine.
You came a little way, so go ahead, and if members don't mind if we run over a few minutes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Members, first of all, I'd like to thank the committee for giving me the opportunity to come here and speak today and represent the suburban transit providers. I'd also like to recognize and thank Auditor Jim Nobles and his staff for the work that they did. As participants in this process, we were impressed by and appreciated their non-biased approach and the extensive work effort and the inclusive process by which they conducted their analysis. The Suburban Transit Association members includes 12 cities. As was mentioned earlier, we include four cities, Maple Grove Transit, Plymouth Metrolink, Far Lake Transit, and Shakopee Transit, whose policies and decisions are made by their representative city councils. And we also have two joint powers associations, which are the other two providers, Minnesota Valley Transit Association, which represents the cities of Apple Valley, Burnsville, Eagan, Rosemont, and Savage, and Southwest Transit, which represents the cities of Eden Prairie, Chaska, and Chanhassen. In 1981, the legislature recognized that various suburban communities were being seriously underserved. The cities were allowed to opt out, as we have been called, from receiving the regional transit services and establish their own services. It was these agencies that were formed to address the actual needs of our local transit providers. Today, the suburban providers provide just over 5 million rides annually, primarily to riders of choice who have the choice of whether or not to utilize public transit. While the ridership has increased across the region, the suburban providers have seen some of the highest growth, including some in the area of tenfold increase over the several years, or nearly three times the population growth in those areas. We recognize that we play a role, a critical role, in the region's transportation system. I'd like to just take a few minutes to comment on some of the legislative auditor's reports, specifically as it relates to governance. But as I get into that, one of the components, and I think the Commissioner McLaughlin talked about as well, is that the legislative auditor's report did confirm that the region's transit system is highly effective and efficient. The report also recognized that the transit operations are well coordinated on a day-to-day basis between the suburban providers and Metro Transit. Transit riders overall are pleased with their providers across the system. And as I mentioned before, ridership has increased within the region over the years. We believe that the efficiency and effectiveness of our regional bus system is in part a result of the competitive nature, as Auditor Nobles mentioned earlier, among the multiple providers and the valuable innovations and other regional benefits that have been received by this structure. The governance structure is clearly complex. We also see this as a common characteristic of other regional transit governance systems. And we see that the region has benefited from the expanded services, reduced congestion, and increased regional innovations as a result of our presence and initiatives. The relationship between the suburban providers and the Metro Council has been strained. I think many would agree with that. We believe in large part due to the scarce financial resources, and which has further hampered our future planning services, as I'm sure it has hampered theirs as well. But we also see that while we have not taken a form or position as a member organization on the form of Metropolitan Council governance, we certainly see that some of our member cities may choose to do that. We do recognize as an organization there are some opportunities for governance consolidation as presented in the report. The makeup of our governing boards, whether they're the city council for the four that I mentioned earlier or the commissions of the joint powers agreements, all have elected representatives on them. Our joint powers agreement with Southwest Transit includes a combination of elected and appointed commissioners, and that is true for Minnesota Valley Transit as well. We see that the specific recommendation to that the suburban providers continue in operation obviously is one that we are pleased to see, and we think in part it's because of the governance structure that we've operated under that has provided some of the benefits to our riders and to our constituents. The ability to stay close to the needs of our riders and has clearly been an issue that has helped increase ridership and service in our areas. There are some opportunities for continued consolidation and was mentioned with Shakopee and Prior Lake, for example. While their governance is separate, they do coordinate with some operational. So overall, while there may be some differences in some of the particulars of the report, we're pleased with the report and pleased to be recognized for our role from the governance and from service in the transit within the region. I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, the Mr. Shetland.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Certainly, thank you. For the Metropolitan Council, how do you plead? Welcome to the committee, Mr. Shetland.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, my name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. With me today is Mr. Wes Quaestra, who is our interim regional administrator. However, the council's new regional administrator is with us today as well, Mr. Pat Bourne from the city of Minneapolis. He's over here on my right. I'd like to introduce him to the committee. And Mr. Bourne will officially begin at the council on February 14th. In the meantime, we will be short and sweet with our comments, and I'm going to leave that up to Mr. Quaestra.
Thank you. State your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, my name is Wes Quaestra, and I am the interim regional administrator for the Metropolitan Council. I offered this to Mr. Bourne before his first day, but he said I could go ahead and make the representation. So, I do want to express our appreciation to the Office of the Legislative Auditor for the tremendous effort they committed to this report. Ms. Randall and her staff spent countless hours interviewing the staff of our council and of our regional partners, reviewing documents and attending meetings. We also appreciate the auditor's both written and verbal comments and testimony that emphasize that our regional transit system is run quite well, and it uniquely scores in the top tier of its peers in measures of both efficiency and access. If you read the report, you will see that there are other transit systems that may score slightly higher than the metro transit, than our regional transit system in some areas, but the consistency of our performance across all areas of measurement is unique. And the taxpayers and the employers and the businesses and the users all benefit from a well-managed transit system. We also appreciate that the auditor really worked to differentiate the weaknesses they saw in the governance structure from the good and worthwhile efforts of many individuals that are committed to the region to providing a good regional transit system. We agree with many of the report's findings. The regional structure for transit is complex and fragmented. I think so. And one of the other testifiers mentioned that's not unique for metropolitan areas. Effective coordination does require committed effort on the part of the council and its regional partners to maintain a well-managed system. We think the report justly points out that we have in many ways met this challenge. That's evidenced by the performance measures that have been mentioned a few times. It's evidenced by the council's work with the County Transit Improvement Board and the Transit Advisory Board, MnDOT, and other local partners to develop and maintain regional services and new transit ways, to secure outside funding, such as the Urban Partnership Agreement that brought in well over $100 million to the region for bus rapid transit, for the HUD Sustainable Communities Grants, for the Living Cities Grants that we've recently received. I mention these because all are highly competitive grant awards that require this region to demonstrate that it can work well with its partners who have a stake in the transit and economic development interests of the region. So we're proud that those relationships have been demonstrated to outside parties who view that as an important criteria of funding. So for these reasons, as was mentioned by Commissioner McLaughlin, we believe the report overstates issues of credibility and distrust among regional partners. CTIB is a relatively new entity authorized by this legislature, and it's understandably taken some effort to structure this relationship. But we both believe that through the strength of this relationship, we have taken full advantage of the opportunities to address the current and future demands for regional services. I think, too, the report is correct in pointing out the tension that exists between the council and the suburban providers. But some of this tension is inherent to the oversight responsibilities of the council as the MPO, and as Mayor Furlong mentioned, to the limitation of regional resources most recently resulting from the underperformance of the motor vehicle sales tax, which is a primary resource for operating funds, and for reductions to state appropriations, as this legislature has seen fit to try to balance a very difficult budget. But the report is also correct in stating that recent work on regional procedures that will govern such areas as procurement and the allocation of regional resources has improved the transparency and accountability of these relationships. And we have worked closely with the suburban transit providers in developing these procedures, and we will continue to work closely as we adapt these procedures to coming times. Finally, we believe that the report's recommendations for improving the council's governance structure are certainly worth consideration. These are not new recommendations. These have been questions that have been raised over the years. But we believe they need to take into account the whole cloth of council responsibilities, not just transit, certainly transit, but also wastewater management, land use planning, and parks. We also believe that it should, whatever structure is viewed and looked at, one of the criteria should be, is this structure capable of ensuring a regional perspective? That's the strength of the council. That's the importance of the council. And council's mission is to do things in the most efficient and effective way to the benefit of the region. And there are some issues that do benefit from a regional perspective versus a city-by-city perspective. It needs to be a balance, obviously. We need to balance the interests of the local stakeholders, of the cities and the counties, with the efficiency and the effectiveness of regional services. We would like to restate that, as was stated by Ms. Randall, the report says that a change in the governance of the council will not by itself address the issues of regional complexity. But still, we're prepared to work cooperatively with this body and with the other stakeholders in the region to look and see if there might be other governance structures that would better serve the interests of the region and the interests of the legislature. So with that, I tried to be brief. In consideration of your time, I'll take any questions you might have.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Seeing none. Thank you for your testimony. Thanks for coming in today.
Mr. Chair.
Seeing no other business, we are adjourned.